did part of John 13. Again, we're not doing John 13 in sort of order of the verses. We're splitting it up thematically. Last week, we looked at what it meant to be a messenger of Jesus. Now, as we consider the 12, the reading that was read for us in John, the 12, right? The 12 that would be apostles, well, 11 of them eventually. This is the contrast in John 13 between what is he expecting of his messengers, those who will remain after he ascends, who will carry out the message, contrasted with the character of Judas Iscariot, who throughout the Gospels is separate. He's presented as separate than the rest of the 12. It is important to note that the Gospels paint a particular picture of Judas before the events of the last week. Now, as we've been going through the last week of Jesus' life, in the last 9 or so chapters of John, it is important to note that before we get to this point, Judas is a particular kind of person and is presented as such, even as early as John chapter 6, which was read for us. After this, many of his disciples turned back and no longer walked with him, which is essentially what Judas ends up doing, though obviously in very different flavor. So Jesus said to the 12, "Do you want to go away as well?" Simon Peter answered, "Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life, and we have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God." Now Peter says something that is going to be so profound later on, right? Because that's the message they're going to proclaim as messengers of Jesus. He is the Holy One. He has the words of eternal life. He is the one that we have come to know. And that's what they're going to do. So John 13, part of that is preparing the 11 to do that very thing. And what did they need? They needed to be humble. They needed to be washed in his blood. They needed to have the same sort of attitude that he had and the message that they were going to present. But then he contrasts this again with Judas, right? Jesus answered, "Did I not choose you, the 12, and yet one of you is a devil?" I don't like this translation particularly, because we know the word devil had a basic meaning, false accuser or slanderer. One of you is a slanderer. One of you is a false accuser, which is what Judas is going to end up doing, right? He's going to end up participating in the false accusations against Jesus and betraying him to the Pharisees, right? He spoke of Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot, for he, one of the 12, was going to betray him. It is that word betray that we focus on, because there's a particular prerequisite to betrayal, right? Something that is required for you to betray is for you to have previously known or had a relationship with. That's not betrayal if you've never had a relationship, right? If you work against somebody and you just have never known who they are, never had any dealings with them, or never had any relationship with them, that's not betrayal. Particularly required, the prerequisite was that Judas had been traveling with him, had known him, had been associated with him, had all the knowledge that the other 11 did, which is what made this betrayal so potent. John 12, 3-6. "Mary therefore took a pound of expensive ointment made from pure nard and anointed the feet of Jesus and wiped his feet with her hair. The house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume, but Judas Iscariot, one of his disciples, he who was about to betray him, said, 'Why was this ointment not sold for 300 denarii and given to the poor?' He said this not because he cared about the poor, but because he was a thief. And having charge of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it." Matthew gives more detail about the story, but focus right now on the thief part, right? That this was already part of Judas's character. This is who Judas was. He was a guy who, as he was traveling with them and learning and doing all the same things as the other 11, would help himself to the money. He was a greedy person, fundamentally a greedy person. Matthew continues on in this particular story. "Then one of the 12, whose name was Judas Iscariot, went to the chief priests and said, 'What will you give me if I deliver him over to you?' They paid him 30 pieces of silver, and from that moment on, he sought an opportunity to betray him." Greed, right? Greed. That's the point. He is a greedy person. Why does he want to do this? For money. As he would continually previously take money out of the money bag, he was sort of the treasurer. And of course, the question is, not question, but the obvious thing is, Jesus knew that, right? There's no way Jesus didn't know that he was stealing money. Now, I presume the other 11 didn't. The other 11 probably had no idea that he was doing this, but Jesus had to have known. And who would have made him the treasurer? Wouldn't that have been Jesus? Probably. Probably Jesus was the one who gave him the money bag. There's a lot of layers to this story. Now, the primary character trait, as far as we are given any character development of Judas, we're given some character development of Peter and Andrew and some of the other apostles we're given. Some of them are not really, we're not really given any character development at all. Thomas, we're given some character development. As far as we're given any character traits of Judas, the one we know is greed. That's the one character trait we know of Judas, is that he's a greedy person. And this is going to be important as we go through the story, right? Greed leads people into all sorts of evil. Judas is not the first, nor will he be the last, to be led astray by greed, right? 1 Timothy 6:10, for the love of money is a root of all kinds of evils. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. This has particular relevance in the life of Judas. His greed eventually led him to his death, did it not? Pierced themselves with many pangs. Judas did pierce himself with many pangs because of his greed. Greed leads people into all sorts of problems. 1 Corinthians 5:11, greed is included in this list of people, of brothers that we are not supposed to associate with. I am writing to you not to associate with anyone who bears the name of brother as if he is guilty of sexual immorality or greed or idolater, reviler, drunkard, or swindler. Greed is in the same class as those other character traits, those other sins, right? And it's interesting how serious it's presented to be. Do not even associate with that greedy person who is a brother specifically, right? Now, we'll examine the actual betrayal and fallout later because Jesus and John, the way that John flows, the betrayal is not going to happen for several more chapters. But what we're examining right now is the character of Judas and the things that led him into this betrayal and, quite frankly, the character of the devil as we go through this story because there's a lot about the devil in this story too in John chapter 13. So let's read the text. From John chapter 13, we'll read some of these verses. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour had come to depart out of this world to the Father, having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. During supper, when the devil had already put into the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father had given all things into his hands, and they had come from God, and it goes on, etc., etc., etc. The thing to note is what? When the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot to betray him. Jesus knows what's happening, right? Think of all the things that Jesus knows in this text. The hour has come. He's loved his own. He knows the end is here. He knows that God has given all things into his hands. He knows that he has to go back to God. All the things that Jesus knows, part of that is this thing that Judas is going to do. He knows that too. Oops. We keep reading in John 13, 21. After saying these things, Jesus was troubled in his spirit. And he testified. And as we set the stage, he's sitting around. They're sitting around dinner. And Jesus sort of just makes this statement. Now, who knows what he's had some conversation already. Surely we don't have everything recorded that they said at this particular event. But they're sort of sitting around dinner and they're sitting around the table. And then Jesus, I imagine, gets this sort of troubled look on his face. He's troubled in his spirit. He's in some sort of turmoil, right? He testified. He says to the table, truly, truly, I say to you, one of you will betray me. The disciples looked at one another, uncertain of whom he spoke. One of the disciples whom Jesus loved was reclining at the table at Jesus' side. So Simon Peter motioned to him and to ask Jesus of whom he was speaking. And again, it's interesting, right? They're all sitting around the table and they're sort of looking at, is it you? And so Peter sort of, I get the impression, he's like, ask him if it's you. Ask him who it is, right? That's what Peter's wanting. He wants to know the answer. But he doesn't want to ask. It's interesting. Peter, I think, is a little bit afraid to ask. So let's get John to ask instead. So that disciple, leaning back against Jesus, said to him, Lord, who is it? Jesus answered, it is he to whom I give this morsel of bread when I have dipped it. So when he had dipped the morsel, he gave it to Judas, the son of Simon Iscariot. Then after he had taken the morsel, Satan entered into him. Now Jesus said to him, what you are going to do, do it quickly. Now, no one at the table knew why he had said this to him. Some thought that because Judas had the money bag, Jesus was telling him, buy what we need for the feast, or that he should give something to the poor. So after receiving the bread, he immediately went out, and it was night. Now, some notes. It is probable that John and Jesus, John's the disciple whom he loved, and Jesus have a whispered conversation unheard by the other disciples. It's interesting the way that it's framed, right? That John is leaning against Jesus. He sort of says to Jesus, who is it? And Jesus says this. Because if everybody at the table had heard, we know Peter's character, right? I cannot imagine Peter doesn't do something to Judas right there, right? What did he do in the garden? He cut off that guy's ear. I can't imagine Peter just not tackling him at that moment. It's very probable to me that John and Jesus have sort of a whispered exchange, and Peter, because he was already afraid to ask, just sort of lets it drop. He doesn't want to push the matter any further, right? Jesus would have told him if he wanted to know, and so he just sort of lets it drop there. So only John hears the part about the one to whom I give the morsel. And then he dips it in the thing and gives it to Judas. And then the next statement that Jesus makes, so they don't hear that. The next statement that Jesus makes is that thing about the go, what you're going to do it quickly. And again, they're confused, right? And it's not uncommon that Jesus left them without all the information, right? They were often confused about things. There were many things that Jesus said that they did not understand. And so again, I think it would have been just part of their habit for them to drop a topic that they didn't have all the information about. There was a lot of times where Jesus said things and they're like, what does that mean? I don't know. You ask him. No, you ask him. And they just let it go, right? They didn't know everything. This was a commonplace thing for them to not have all the information. So they just sort of drop it, I think, the way that they dropped a lot of topics. Now, it's interesting. One thing I want to note about this, right here, then after he had taken the morsel, Satan entered into him, and Jesus said to him, I do not think that Jesus is talking to Judas at that particular moment. There's no way that Jesus doesn't know what's going on, right? We know Jesus knows this as Satan enters into him. I do kind of think that Jesus is talking to Satan at that particular juncture. What you're going to do it quickly. Because he knows the plan, right? Jesus knows the plan. And Jesus and Satan have already had some sparring going back and forth. Jesus had talked to some of his demons, and he's actually talked to the devil himself, the whole thing in Matthew chapter 4. Jesus and Satan have already had a lot of dialogue in the Gospels, and this is going to be the culmination of that. Now, some things we're going to learn from the text. Number one, the story highlights, I think, most of all, the ignorance of the devil. The ignorance of the devil, as he is influencing Judas to do this particular thing. We know that Satan enters into him. The story highlights his ignorance. Because if the devil had known what was going to happen, I don't think he would have taken this approach. If he had known the things that were going to take place over the next few days, the triumph that Jesus would eventually have, the devil would not want any part of that. He doesn't know what's going to happen. John 13, 2 and 3, during supper when the devil had already put it into the heart of Judas Iscariot to betray him, John 13, 27, after he'd taken the morsel, Satan entered into him. If the devil had known that the death and resurrection of Jesus was going to be his very downfall, what would he have done rather instead? I imagine he would have rather, like the triumphal entry, had the people like Jesus. Had the people really want to be with Jesus and worship Jesus and praise Jesus. He would not want Jesus to die. He would not want Jesus to resurrect. He would not want any of that to take place had he known the plan. The devil is not omniscient. He is flawed. He is limited. He is your enemy, yes. He is powerful, yes. He is absolutely someone to be concerned about, yes, but he is not all-powerful. Your enemy is weak. Your enemy is limited. Your enemy does not know everything that God knows. And so when God promises to give you victory over him, you can know that that's true because the devil in this particular story, more than any other, plays right into God's hands. Because he doesn't know what the plan is. And we, I think, can take comfort in the fact that even though the devil really would like us to fail, he would like us to stumble and fall, he does not know everything that he needs to know in order to make that happen. He does not have total power over this world. He does not have all the information that he needs. Most people live in rebellion to God because of ignorance, yet God provided an avenue to alleviate that ignorance, right? We are to alleviate the ignorance of people who should know God, but who, for whatever reason, any number of reasons, don't. We are to provide the knowledge that people need to overcome the enemy. And part of that knowledge is knowing that your enemy is not perfect, that your enemy has weaknesses and flaws. How worse is it then when we who claim to be knowledgeable reject the word of God? And this brings us to Judas, right? As we think about Judas in this story, the betrayal, that word betrayal, why that word is so powerful is because it comes from a place of relationship and knowledge. It's so bad that Judas does this because Judas has the knowledge, right? Judas does have the knowledge of who Jesus is. It's not like Jesus has been hiding stuff. Jesus has told him over and over and over who he is and what he's here to do and what's going to happen and all the different things that Jesus has said. And so we see that the devil wants to exploit your flaws, not attack your strengths. Because what enemy would want to do that? I mean, really, he's not dumb. He is limited in some ways. But the devil's not dumb. He's going to go at you through your flaws. Judas, who, by all accounts, should have been one of those most prepared to do the right thing, right? He had been traveling with Jesus. He'd been going with him through all this time and all this ministry. He knew all the things and had seen all the miracles. He had heard all the teaching, all the things that Jesus has said. He knew the Son of God personally. Judas was one of those who should have most effectively been able to do the right thing. So what happened? He was a greedy person. And this is why it's so important that the Gospels highlight this character quality of Judas long before the events of this evening, the night that we're talking about here, this particular event, that this is part of Judas's character. He is a greedy person. He cares a lot about money. He's a thief, right? He steals, and he's been taking things for some time, the way John writes it in John chapter 12, that he's been doing this the whole time. He's had the money bag, and he would just take it out of it, whatever he wanted, right? He allowed his desire for money to overrule his knowledge of and relationship with Jesus. From that moment, he sought an opportunity to betray him. And then we come to tonight, and the devil starts to work in him and work in his heart and work in his mind. But he had already made the decision long before. The decision to go against Jesus, the decision to let his greed rule his heart, to let his love of money overrule his love of Jesus. That was something that he had already done, right? That story with the expensive ointment. And from that moment on, he sought an opportunity to betray him. And then the devil is, always think about this evening, the meal that they're having. The devil, I would imagine, and I don't know how it goes. I just sort of conceptualize things as we're thinking about this. I imagine that if I'm the devil, what I would say is, this is the opportunity. This is the chance. This is the time. You've been looking for it all this time. Now is your opportunity to betray him. Again, because the devil's ignorant of what's going to happen. But we all have exploitable flaws. None of us are perfect. All of us have that character trait or that temptation or that thing or that person or that desire that makes us weak. If the devil knew what Judas's was, I imagine he knows what mine is. I imagine he knows what yours is, too. And like we said, he's not going to attack you where you're strong, because that's stupid. He's going to attack you where you're weak. We all have flaws that can be exploited. And if we're not vigilant, as Judas obviously was not vigilant, Judas was not tempering himself and working very hard to overcome this particular flaw. If we are like that and just sort of laissez-faire and that's not no big deal and I don't have to worry about it and maybe we even do what Judas did and feed the flaw, because not only was he just lazy about his flaw, he was actively feeding that flaw, it would not be very difficult for us to be swayed against Jesus either. And it maybe isn't greed for you. I don't know. Maybe it's not greed. It could be any number of things. But this is why self-reflection, self-examination is so important. Why it's so important that we have this regular conversations with each other where we try to figure out how we can best serve God and overcome temptation. If you don't know yourself very well, it's going to be much easier for the devil to figure out what your flaw is and exploit it. We need to know these things about ourselves. 1 Peter 5, 6 through 8. Humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, so that at the proper time he might exalt you, casting all your anxieties on him because he cares for you. Be sober-minded, be watchful. Your adversary, the devil, prowls around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour. He devoured Judas. Ate him whole. Just ate him right up. But he prowls around looking in this community, this congregation. We can't see him. He's really sneaky. He's a sneaky lion. As he prowls around in here, I imagine I can just conceptualize him prowling through the pews. He's slinking under them. He's going around. He's sniffing you out. He's going to find that person to devour. If what? Some things he says to do to overcome that, to not be a Judas. Number one, humble yourselves. What does that mean? Admit that, yeah, you do have those flaws. You've got to admit that. Judas, I don't think, ever admitted that to himself, or he didn't care. He wasn't humble, that's for sure. We need to humble ourselves and realize, yes, I do have flaws. I do have temptations. I do have things that could be exploited to lead me away from God. That's number one. Number two, be sober-minded. What does that mean? Be sober-minded. Be in control of your own faculties. Be controlled in your thinking. Don't let yourself be swayed or influenced or overcome by these desires. But be careful in your thoughts. Be intentional in your thoughts. Be intentional about the things that you do and the things you participate in. Don't just be sort of willy-nilly and you're just sort of living life and you're just sort of floating through and you're not really thinking about it. You're not very intentional. You're not very careful or considerate, right? Be careful about the things that you do and the way that you think. Number three, be watchful. He prowls around, but we could see him coming if we were watchful, right? If we were paying attention, if we were alert and vigilant to the things that are in our lives that might lead us astray. It might be a relationship, maybe somebody in your life through whom the devil would lead you away from God. It might be a thing. It might be an opportunity. It might be a job. It might be any number of things that it could be. And if we're not watchful, before you know it, we've abandoned and betrayed Jesus just like Judas. We have knowledge, we know who Jesus is, but somehow that doesn't seem to be important when we're being led astray by these various temptations and things. The choice to be a messenger or a betrayer of Jesus is essentially a choice of priorities. You see the 11 who chose to, even though they were flawed, chose to humble themselves and admit their flaws and overcome them, versus Judas who just lived with his flaw and fed it and used it and kept doing the thing that his flaw wanted him to do. He kept stealing. He kept being greedy. He kept looking for opportunities to do that. What will you do with the knowledge you have of Jesus? Tell people about it as a messenger or ignore it as a betrayer? If you ignore the message, the information or the knowledge you have of Jesus, if you just let that be in your life and you don't do anything with it and you don't tell people about it, you're being a Judas. You're betraying Jesus. Number two, what will you choose to act on? Your desires as Judas, who acted upon his greed, or God's desires, Jesus' desires as the messengers of Jesus as they went forth into the world and acted not on their own desires, but on the desires of Jesus. And finally, are you aware of your flaws and watchful? Are you intentional about guarding your hearts?